Now, adjust the volume control so that the sound can be heard in all parts of the room.
This is the Protect Your Assets podcast. It's the
Sandman. You get the idea? Bring me
a dream. It's on the internet.
Make him the cutest that I've ever seen.
Go on.
Give him two lips.
Like it's like no cheese I've ever tasted.
And tell him that his loss.
Here's the Sandman. Over
Sandman. What's the most important thing in your life? It's your family, right? And if you don't have the right documents in place, if something happens to you, you're going to create a real mess for them. The probate courts are backed up and it's taking over 2 years to get your affairs approved by a judge. Don't do this to your spouse or your kids. Today I'm going to explain to you in simple terms, is a trust right for you? And what are five estate planning myths you probably believe? It's all coming up next. So stick around. Good morning and welcome to Protect Your Assets. I am David Hollander. You hear the jingle in the background. People around here call me the Sandman. That's because I help my listeners sleep well at night by answering their most troubled legal and financial questions each week right here on your favorite station. And that's because I happen to be an attorney and have been running a financial firm for almost 30 years. And so this past week, I sat down with Ken and Susan. They have two boys. Ken's a retired engineer and has managed to accumulate a little over $13 million in retirement accounts and real estate, of course. And they both told me that they wanted to make sure their boys received as much of their estate as possible when they're no longer here. They're concerned about the tax law changes that are coming here in the not-too-distant future as the Trump tax laws fade away, and they want to know what they can do right now to make sure their sons and grandkids get as much of their estate as possible and not the government who keeps giving it away. They brought with them their estate plan. Now, I was thrilled that they had a plan that included their house, their cars, business, retirement accounts. But after I reviewed it with them, it turned out that it was a real mess. In fact, they were looking at some serious taxes and penalties by the IRS and a long and expensive probate because their documents were so outdated and missed some pretty fundamental pieces. That got me thinking about what I talked to you about today, and the bottom line is this couple was only trying to help their kids, but in reality, because so much time had passed since they spoke to their attorney, who, by the way, retired, what they did is create a real mess for their kids and grandkids. And they don't want to do that to their kids. So stick with me for the next 45 minutes as I'll talk about some simple strategies that people are using to avoid all this mess, paying less taxes, passing more of what you've worked so hard for, avoiding courts and attorneys. This is important stuff, and you need to listen carefully and take some notes, as you could literally save your family hundreds of thousands of dollars and unpriceworthy pain. Now, let's get started. Well, last week's bank bailouts averted a catastrophe. The Dow Jones finished the week off 0.1%. S&P was actually up 1.4%. NASDAQ, big winner, up 4.4%. The European index down 3.1% as the ECB continues to raise rates a half a point. And the 10-year treasury was down 0.3%. Oil off 13%. Year to date, it's off over 17%, down at $66 a barrel. More on that later. And bonds up 1.5%. So the fallout from Silicon Valley Bank has dominated markets this past week. And as such, I thought I'd focus on a couple things. What's happened with Silicon Valley Bank and other banks? Two, why is this happening? Three, is Fed action over the weekend and this past week helping the crisis? Four, the impact on the monetary policy and inflation? And five, is this a bearish game changer? Let's jump into it. SVB, as we talked about last week, was, of course, the largest bank failure we've seen since Washington Mutual started me thinking all about 2008 again. I remember that real well. Then, as we know, this past week, the Federal Reserve Bank and the European government stepped in. We had Credit Suisse. All those came under scrutiny. You also had local bank, First Republic, and some of the major banks putting some money together to loan to them. And the Fed created a new lending facility called the Bank Term Funding Program, which will provide loans to banks and accept the treasuries that got them into trouble because they were underwater, and agency mortgage-backed securities as collateral. And the lending facility will value these bonds at par, meaning they're not subject to the market that has caused them to go down. So there's no market value, and that is the important part. So the question is, do the moves by the government solve the crisis? I'm going to say no, but they help. There are two main reasons why I'm saying that. First is local economic risk. So thousands of companies, as we talked about last week, had money at SVB, and the vast majority of them, as reported, was over 80%, had deposits in excess of $250,000. Of course, that's the FDIC limit. So if those uninsured deposits are lost, then they will have no money to meet payroll, pay suppliers, etc. Now, we talked about that last week. That seems to have been averted. And that's what helped this market this week hang in there. The second risk is bigger. The fact that SVB and the SBNY failed was because of lack of interest rate risk management, period. Banks bought long-dated bonds over the past several years, and they didn't manage the duration or the interest rate risk. So as rates were rising, as we talked about last week, over the past year, and longer-dated bonds started dropping in value below par, the bonds were just not worth what they were. So this problem is a varying problem across banks in the U.S., and it could represent a threat to those banks that would have a problem if capital was being called. But you could argue that the Fed and the government has removed much, if not all, of that risk by now accepting these bonds from banks at par. This eliminates the need for a bank like SVB to fire sale those treasuries during times of stress and provides capital to keep things going. So the big question is, who's going to pay for it? The core issue going forward is, and this is for most banks, is the liability associated with the uninsured deposits, those in excess of $250,000. Is that the government's responsibility or is it ours? So I expect as we move forward, you're going to see regional banks start to get regulated a lot harder. You're going to see the cost of capital for those smaller banks where lots of small businesses borrow money going up. But the bottom line is the government response solved, at least temporarily, the problem that we could have been facing this week. So will this make the Fed? This is the big question, because this coming week we're going to see Chairman Powell on Wednesday, which will be a big day, raise rates or not. And so does this market event and the events that were occurring in Europe with Credit Suisse, will this affect the Fed? Will it cause them to be less hawkish, stop raising rates? The market is pricing 25% chance that they're going to raise rates, possibly 0.25%. It's a big argument. I think they're going to do it. I think they're going to raise 0.25%, but not 0.5%, which was what was thought of before. And I think that because inflation's still around. We saw it this week. It's not going away. So is this a bearish game changer and a reason to go to cash right now in your portfolio? No, not yet. Okay, so I hope that helps. The situation obviously was stressful, but it's not 2008 again because we're looking at a different situation. You've got treasuries backing deposits, which are liquid and have some trading ability, versus in 2008, we had the subprime mortgage, which was backed by, as you remember, CDOs and things that had no value because the mortgages had gone past the value of the homes. Remember that? And so that's, in some way, the silver lining. Now, is the Fed hitting the brakes too hard? I want to come back to bonds because the bond market thinks so. Last week was a pretty significant week for bonds. Not for stocks, but for bonds it was. It was equivalent of some 20% drops, if you will. Let me talk about that. On March 16th, 2022, this was over a year ago, the Fed started raising rates. They did 8 interest rate hikes. This was to slow down inflation. Since then, inflation has peaked and remains high, but economic growth seems to be continuing on. The recent bank troubles are an early indication that the policy might be overly restrictive, and the bond market is sending a signal right now that the end of the aggressive rate hikes could be over. We had something happen last week, which is called a 3-sigma event. I want to explain that. It's when the 2-year treasury drops significantly in a short period of time. And that just happened this past week. The 2-year treasury dropped 1.2% in a 5-day period of time. Now, that has not happened since 1987. In a matter of days, the market moved from pricing in 3 rate hikes and 0 cuts for the rest of 23 to pricing in 1 rate hike and 3 rate cuts. So it was a literally an about face. Those of you who were holding 2-year treasuries, you had a great week. You made a lot of money. Those of you who weren't, who were longer on the curve, well, you got hurt. So this has started to steepen, and this is where the Fed may turn around on their policy, because if you look at the bond market again, when you have 2-year yields falling below the Fed fund rate, this signals traditionally the end of the Fed raising rates. So we saw that in 2019, 2006, 1999. So the banking sector presents a new worry, of course, for investors, but it's a context of an ongoing bear market that started 15 months ago. And for perspective, the average bear since 1945 has lasted 13 months. And remember, when the Fed pauses, this is usually positive for a balanced portfolio. And typically we see, again, you can't rely on this, but I'm just looking at history. 1984, 1989, 1995, 2006, 2018, some pretty decent returns for the S&P 500 as a result of what was happening there. Now, I think it's too early to call a bottom in the oil market. However, there are 2 technical reasons this past week that $66 a barrel is important. And so from a technical standpoint, I want you to pay attention to that, because right now there's support between $65 and $67 a barrel, and this started back in 2021. So based on the latest trading we've seen, you're looking at a top of 73 to 80, and a break below that could take us below 66, but I don't think very much. So I think that's the range we're going to see for the S&P 500. We closed at 39.16. The resistance level on the upside is 39.51. Support on the downside is 38.25, and then 37.33 after that. What documents do you need in your estate plan? We'll find out when we come back. You are listening to The Sandman on the Protect Your Assets Radio Network.
Take the first step toward reaching your financial goals and get the information that can help you live a confident retirement. That first step is going to pyaevents.com and signing up for our next free event. That's pyaevents.com. Now back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, The Sandman.
Welcome back. I'm attorney David Hollander, also known as The Sandman, and you are listening to Protect Your Assets this morning. If you're just joining us, I am answering the question, is a trust right for you? And what are 5 estate planning myths you probably believe? So let's start with some basics. Before you really know what type of estate plan you need, you really need to take an inventory of the assets that you have. Let me explain about that. If you have real estate, maybe rental properties, life insurance, retirement accounts, maybe you own a business or multiple businesses. Well, that's important. And that's going to have an impact on what type of documents you set up. Then there's just some basic documents that'll make up a typical estate plan. Generally, you and your spouse each should have your own respective will. And wills do need to be witnessed by two non-interested persons, meaning they're not standing to gain anything from your estate and certainly shouldn't be family members or folks that are connected to you like that. Now, this week we did get a question. Now, this comes from Aaron. Aaron was asking me this past week about a friend of his. Now, he had a friend who was same age as him, 42 years old, father, and he just passed away. And Aaron was a good friend of, we'll call him Steve, and Steve had wanted Aaron to help him out. Now, Aaron's a pretty smart guy, went to business school, knows a lot about a lot of things, and tried to help him out last minute, went over to his house and wrote up a will. We call that a holographic will. And he knew to have it witnessed by two different people, which he did. But he forgot to include an executor. And the question he's asking me is that going to matter? Well, yeah, it's going to matter. I'm sorry, Aaron, that's a mistake. So you're going to have to submit that to probate court. You're going to need a lawyer to help you do that. You can't do it yourself. And that will appoint an executor who will be the person that will actually administer that estate. And there is a statute that covers that. Now, what about a trust? There are so many different types of trusts. And most people have what's called a revocable living trust. We call that in the business an RLT. And these are because you can amend them or change them. But all they really do for you is avoid probate. They don't provide creditor protection. They don't help you with Proposition 19, which is now the law, and paying more taxes on property that you pass to your family. Nope. Another very important document that should be in your plan is a durable power of attorney. That's a financial one. And then also a durable power of attorney for health care. And in these documents, you may want to consider naming someone who's a guardian, like in Aaron's case, for his children who are minors. Someone who could be the custodian of the money that they'll need to pay bills. Had another case recently where a son was trying to help his father out and the son went to the bank. He was on the account and so was his mom who had passed away. And the son was trying to pay some bills that were coming up and the bank would not let him stay on the account after his father passed away, meaning he could go on as a joint tenant because he had a power of attorney. But once the father passed away, the son would lose all privileges to that bank account. So think about that. He's going to have to pay bills for funeral home, arrangements, just rent, utilities, all those kind of things. And now he can't get towards the money. So that's where a durable power of attorney will not help in that regard. So naming someone on an account as a custodian for the money could help. Now, you also may want to nominate someone to be your healthcare surrogate, meaning that if you're unable to make a decision, one day you wake up, you don't know who you are or where you are. You're physically great, but your mind's not there. Who's going to make those decisions for you when it comes down to it? Now, let's get back a little bit to the probate process because I want you to understand what you're going to go through if you don't do anything. And even if you do a will, remember, wills do go to probate. A trust avoids probate, and that's why you may want to think about it if you want to avoid that process. But essentially, the process right now involves you filing a petition, and then you have to wait until the court starts to look at your file. Usually, a clerk does that. And then they may post notes about what you need or not need to do. They may give you a tentative ruling saying everything looks great. But what our experience has been is they may find fault with a couple things and then kick that can down the road 3 to 6 months where you're trying to fix problems so you can get access to what's rightfully yours. And we do have folks who call every now and then who say, hey, my attorney's not calling me back. It's been 2.5 years. You know, can you take the case? And I usually tell them, look, there's nothing more we can do for you because it's a process. It's kind of like making sausage. It's a process. You don't want to rush it. And in this case, you can't rush it because it's overloaded. COVID And the pandemic is still having an impact on courts, taking a lot longer than it used to get through the process. And that's just because it was so backed up. So if you want to avoid that process, then have your trust created or have it reviewed, particularly if it's been a while. So why is something that is so important rarely completed by people? Well, I think because it becomes overcomplicated. You know, there's a lot of documents to consider. There's a lot of things to think about. When you start looking at the paperwork and things involved, you just get overwhelmed. And it's easier just to walk away than to deal with something you really didn't want to deal with in the first place. So when you start the process, I think a good place to start is, again, just take inventory of the assets you're thinking about, which you probably may do on a spreadsheet or already have laid out somewhere. And then you can decide how you want certain things to go. It's a really good starting point because then that'll dictate what your estate plan could look like when it's finalized. And then it may accomplish a lot more things that you could actually see and understand, and then it starts to make sense. And then maybe you just do one or two of the documents necessary to get it done, and you just build that over time. And then once you're completed, you're like, oh, that wasn't so bad, as opposed to trying to tackle the whole enchilada at once. So just some ideas you might want to think about as you start to deal with some of the problems that are coming up. Particularly right now, we've got the income tax laws that you know are going to phase away. So in 2018, they call it the Trump tax laws, were put into place, and those have a sunset provision. And so those laws will be expiring in a little over a year, and then we're going to have to deal with some pretty difficult tax rates. And so one of the things that you need to consider if you have a trust is, does your current trust solve the problems that are coming down the road? Now, I don't know if you heard about a week ago, before all the banking crisis started, President Biden came out and was talking about the tax bill that he'd like to get passed. And there's a lot of changes in there in terms of things that are going to cost more in taxes, estate taxes, income taxes, capital gain taxes. These are all issues that your family may have to deal with when they would receive what was rightfully yours. And you may feel like, look, I worked really hard for these assets. I continue to manage them. And if something happens to me, what kind of taxes are we going to have to pay just to hold on to those things? Will we be able to? So if you don't know if your current estate plan solves the problems that are coming or that exist today, if you haven't really reviewed this in the last 5 years, then you could be exposed. And I say 5 years because you may not be aware of Prop 19 here in California. This is now the law, and it affects all real estate that you would pass on to your heirs. So if there's a family home or a rental property that you'd like to keep in your family, but you're unaware of how the taxes, I'm talking about the county taxes, are going to jump up upon your passing, then you better get in front of this, and you better get in front of it fast, because this one could definitely take that property away from you. So if you want to find out more about this and get some straight answers from attorneys who do this work at absolutely no cost right now, we will help you figure this out and let you know what it would cost. You have to call this number, 866-PROTECT. My team is here this morning right now. We're ready to talk to you, 866-PROTECT, to find out what you could be facing with Prop 19 and all the other tax laws that are coming. Again, call, get some help right now, 866-PROTECT. Coming up next, don't miss our popular They Say segment, where they say if you have a trust, then your family-owned business will automatically pass to your kids. Is that true? Find out when we come back. You're listening to the Protect Your Assets Show with the Sandman. We will be right back.
Take the first step toward reaching your financial goals and get the information that can help you live a confident retirement. That first step is going to pyaevents.com and signing up for our next free event. That's pyaevents.com. Now, back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman.
Welcome back. I'm attorney David Hollander, also known as Sandman around here. And this morning you are listening to Protect Your Assets. I don't know if you heard President Biden's latest tax plan, with the government printing over $7.9 trillion in stimulus. Interest rates have been rising. Banks are defaulting. And now taxes are certainly going to be going up because who's going to pay for all this? Well, you need to get prepared for that. And as these sunset laws go away for taxes over the next couple of years, the net effect is you have assets and they're going to tax them. It's that simple. So what should you be doing to make sure your kids hang on to your assets and pay less in taxes? Well, that's what I'm talking about today, because some people know how to do this and they continue to get wealthier. And those who don't, well, they have problems. So what are some of the creative legal strategies that the wealthy use to pass on more wealth to their next generation? Well, that's what we're covering today as we talk about, is a trust right for you? And what are some myths you probably heard that may or may not be true? Well, now it's time for one of our fan favorite parts of the show, our They Say segment, where we debunk common myths, half-truths, and sometimes just bad advice that they say.
Who are they? What do they know that I don't? And what are they saying this week? Here's David Hollander, the Sandman's answer. All I
know is that I don't know. So here's one they say. They say that if you have a trust, then your family-owned business is protected, and it will automatically pass to your kids upon your death. Is that true? No, it probably isn't. And let's talk about that. Well, first of all, a business that you own, that you've been managing and running, to be properly funded in your trust, must be added to your trust. So there's a schedule of assets in your trust, and you have to do a formal process where you name the business, and then you fund that or put that in your trust. Now, the business can still continue on with the name, but practically speaking, who's going to run it if something were to happen to you? You want to make sure that your estate plan has that built into it. And if it's a family member or a child, then make sure they know that. Make sure they want to do that. And if they don't, well, find somebody else to do it or get an insurance policy. They have special policies that can pay for and find and pay the salary of an executive to come run the company. And if you're going to wind it up or sell it, then that can all happen too. Next, if it's a family-owned business, and let's say that perhaps you and your brother, which we seek all the time, or you and your brother and sister, I've seen that quite a bit where the brother, one of the brothers is running the business, the other brother, you know, does something in the business, and the sister, in this case that I'm thinking about, she didn't really do anything but own a third of the business, and she receives the net profits as the business continues on. Well, what if something were to happen to one of them? How do you find out who gets what interest? And does the business continue? These are all sorts of issues that we deal with all the time as we look at family-owned businesses and what will happen when multiple siblings have interests in those business. Because you got to think about who's going to run the day-to-day operation to ensure that that value in that business that's been built up passes on effectively if something were to happen to you. So something to think about is you might develop what's called a business continuity plan. You can look these up. And this includes tax considerations because, of course, when events like these occur, taxes will be owed. And there'll be things you need to do to make sure that they're managed properly. There also is this issue I keep talking about, which is the management protocol. Also, revenue distribution to your family. What will that look like if something were to happen? And what are the things you want to do to preserve the maximum value of that business as you decide, in this case, it won't be you, but your family decides what's going to happen to it. So you don't want to be short-sighted on this one. It is worth the time to work with an attorney like our firm, Hollander & Hollander. We work on these things to protect and preserve what you've worked so hard to build. And there are different types of ways to do that. Now, what type of trust might you use if you're thinking about something like this? Well, in my experience, trust can be good, but they can also be more complex than they need to be. And in most cases, when you start doing more advanced estate planning strategies, you may set up types of trust that are irrevocable. Now, irrevocable type of trusts enable assets to be creditor protected, They also give you flexibility when it comes to taking advantage of estate tax laws that exist today. Don't forget, it's $12.9 million per person right now. That is going away, but that is what it is currently. So as you think about which assets you want to place in different types of trusts, remember that if they're irrevocable, typically you lose control of that asset and it's handed over to a trustee who then has a fiduciary responsibility to the beneficiaries, not you, the grantor. And this includes not only the current income beneficiaries, but also eventual beneficiaries who would take after that person passes away. Now, these differing interests, of course, create potentially conflict of interest with the trustee. And problems can arise when family members act as a trustee when the other family member is the beneficiary. This generally is not a good idea, as it can place a burden on the trustee. And most times, has been my experience, it strains family relationships. Because when money gets involved, relationships have a problem. It's just that simple. You might consider putting the child in charge of some of the assets, with the ultimate decision maker being a corporate or a professional fiduciary to alleviate the pressure that might come between the siblings. This can go a long way in reducing that conflict that would potentially arise. And I've seen many families torn apart by money and improper thought and consideration because it just took a little bit more time to think about it. So if you've lived long enough, you probably had a stress test from your doctor or someone who runs these sorts of things for you. You know, the medieval torture device where you run uphill, wires attached to your chest, feels like a super glue when you try and take it off. You know the one I'm talking about. Well, you can do that for your trust. And we're going to be doing a workshop at Perry's on March 30th. Still have seats available. You can come. We can talk privately about things that you're concerned about. This is in Larkspur. I know Perry's is all over the Bay. This is the one in Larkspur, in that beautiful Redwood Garden, if you've been over there, right off Magnolia. That'll be on March 30th at 6:15 is when we get started. You can register for that by going to our website, libertygroupllc.com. The website is libertygroupllc.com. There's an events tab at the top. You click on that events tab, and then you can register by clicking the blue button and reserve your seat. And if you want to bring a friend, that's okay too. Go ahead and click that. And as long as there are seats available, we'd love to see you. So that's where we'll be talking about things like this. Proposition 19 is a big one. If you haven't seen the website about it, I encourage you to go take a look at it because it is now the law in California. You would go to www.boe.ca.gov/prop19, Prop 19, and read the frequently asked questions to see some of the things that could happen to you and your family as they inherit your property. Because as you look at these sort of things, you may say, well, I haven't thought about that. I haven't thought about if the tax went from, say, $6,000 a year to, say, County of Marin. Now it's all of a sudden $65,000 a year. How are we going to pay for that? And remember, most of that is not deductible. So what kind of income do you have to make to, after tax, by the way, to pay that kind of tax just to hang on to that property? Or if you had a rental property, for instance, and let's say it's cash flowing pretty nicely because you bought it such a long time ago, you still have expenses with all this rain. Sure, the roof. I'm sure you've had some issues, right, with drainage and so forth. It's not cheap to get these properties fixed. Well, what all of a sudden if you had now a $65,000 or an $85,000 tax bill to add on top of that each and every year going forward, what's that going to do to your cash flow on that property? And what would your heirs do as they inherit that property and now have to deal with that same question? And they're not really necessarily prepared like you are to deal with it. These are great questions. And these are the type of things that when you sit down with a team who has experience with real estate, experience with financial markets and cash, like we do, what do you do? How do you set this up legally so you avoid problems? As I was talking about earlier, we had a client recently whose father was ill. He was trying to help his dad, went down to the bank, big bank, and the bank gave him hassle. problems, didn't do what they wanted to do. And he didn't have a lot of time. And when his father passed away, unfortunately, he was stuck. So there are things you can do before you get to that point that will help your family. But if you don't take action, if you don't set things up, well, then it's your fault, plain and simple. And what you're doing is creating a mess and pain for your kids, for your spouse. And you don't want to do that. I know that. So if you want help, if you want to fix the problem or at least understand what the problem could be, because maybe you don't even know you have a problem, then pick up the phone. We've been doing this for 30 years. We have lots of experience. And usually pretty quickly after a 15-minute consultation, we can put the finger on the pain, at least show you what's coming. 866-PROTECT. What are you waiting for? Come on. You know this is important. Take advantage. 866-776-8328. Again, 866-776-8328. Pick up the phone. Talk to my team. We're here today to answer your questions. Set up a time to talk. 866-PROTECT. Coming up next, think your wife will end up with your retirement account? If something unfortunate happened to you, think again. Find out what has happened to others who weren't paying attention. It always pays you to keep it tuned right here. We'll be right back.
If you missed any of Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, all you have to do is go to pyaradio.com where you can download or listen to our latest shows for free. Just go to pyaradio.com on your computer or mobile device when it's most convenient for you. That's pyaradio.com. Now back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman.
Welcome back. I'm David Hollander, also known as the Sandman. That's because I help my listeners sleep well at night by answering their most troubled legal and financial questions each week. And I'll bet the most important thing in your life is your family and your loved ones. And if that is the case, and you haven't done anything to protect them, then shame on you. You need a will, you need a trust potentially, because if you don't have one, you're leaving them with a big mess to deal with. And I know you don't want to do that. It is a beautiful day. You can take advantage of it right now. Call 866-PROTECT right now. We're here to help you answer that question. Is a trust right for you? It may or may not be. Now, getting back to today's topic, here are some myths that you might believe are true that can really get in the way when your family's trying to solve a problem as a result of you becoming ill or, unfortunately, passing away. So you may think your will has more power than it does. Many folks that I've talked to mistakenly believe that their will takes precedent over what's called a designation form. And this could just be wrong. And here's why. A will governs assets of what's called your probate estate. Same with a trust. But accounts or policies that have a contractual beneficiary designation are not governed by your will or your trust because they pass outside of probate. Hope that makes sense. In other words, if an asset has to go through probate to get to your family, then it doesn't meet what I'm talking about. There are certain accounts that you set up, like a life insurance policy, where when you die, it pays who's named as the beneficiary by contract, and therefore it avoids the probate process and is not subject to a trust or a will, period. So last year, I met with a prospective client who had three different 401k accounts. You may say, well, why three? Well, they changed jobs. They'd worked for different tech companies over the last 20 years and just decided to leave them at the different companies. So we reviewed the accounts. We discovered that his ex-wife, from whom he'd been divorced for 15 years, was the primary beneficiary of, well, of course, the oldest 401k that he had out there. So when he dies, in this case, his ex-wife would end up getting that 401k, even though he's remarried. and want his new wife to receive that account. Doesn't matter what you want. Matters what's on the paperwork. Another problem that I've seen happen, failing to plan for contingencies. Well, like what? Well, you'd think a mother would predecease her son typically. I had a case where the son was the only beneficiary. Now, this is going to get a little complicated here. The only beneficiary of a special needs trust. And that's because this son had certain health issues that affected his ability to function. Now, he was pretty normal overall. You wouldn't think anything was wrong, but there were certain executive decisions and things he just couldn't make because he didn't have the capacity to do that. So his mom set up a special needs trust that would govern his share of the inheritance if something were to happen to her. That's what that's all about. The other two children were also beneficiaries of her trust, her bigger trust. And when the special needs trust, in this case, didn't come to fruition because her son predeceased her, and she was 92 years old, by the way. And then after he passed away, she became sick about 6 months later, and then she died. The two remaining children would share everything 50-50. But what about the son of the special needs trust son who passed away? Well, in this case, that child received nothing. And there was nothing wrong with that grandchild. And grandma wanted, in this case, grandson, to get his father's share, or roughly a third of the estate. But in the papers, they weren't written correctly. She had a trust. She had a special needs trust. She had these family members that she cared about and wanted to receive her money. But the papers weren't written properly. It needed to say per stirpes. In order for her grandson to receive that, it had to be worded properly. Even though it is Latin, it has power. It means something. And it just wasn't done correctly. Now the family's involved in expensive litigation. Of course, there's bitter feelings among the family members. They don't talk to each other anymore. And that's just a shame. Some best practices to take to heart. Keep copies of all communications when updating beneficiary designations by mail or online. Copies of letters, website submissions, any confirmations you receive from those insurance companies or brokerage houses, those should all be kept with your estate planning folder. And if you don't have it in paper form, I recommend you do it in a vault, an electronic database that's saved, encrypted, and protected from fire, rain, hurricanes. And you should review these things at least once a year, including beneficiary designations, I'd say every 3 to 5 years. Because there's no doubt that in the next few months, we're going to see some more changes. We just had bank failures. We just heard about more taxes coming our way, and these will impact the way assets pass to your children. And before these changes affect you, find out if you're on the right path and that things are going to go the way that you want. At our company, we help people like you feel more confident and comfortable when it comes to their estate. So set up your complimentary 15-minute estate planning strategy session right now with my team by calling us 866-PROTECT. This will absolutely be no cost to you to just get some information and see how it applies to you, but you have to give us a call right now. 866-776-8328. Talk to an attorney. Find out your rights. Absolutely complimentary, but you have to call us. 866-776-8328. Want to give a big thanks to the Protective Asset team for putting together a great show today. My executive producer and network manager, Kevin Renfer, and of course, all the fabulous producers back there, Phil, Adrian, Raph. Thank you, guys. Appreciate your help this morning. Because without my team, I'm just another pretty voice on the radio. You've been listening to the Protect Your Assets show. I am David Hollander, the Sandman. Go out and make the rest of your life the best of your life.
Investment advisory services are offered through Liberty Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. The strategies mentioned are not suitable for everyone. The information expressed is not considered your specific situation or objectives and may not be appropriate for all investors. Past performance is not indicative of future results. To better understand the risk associated with investing and how it reacts to different market conditions, listeners should always consult with their qualified investment professionals, financial advisors, legal legal or tax specialist and conduct their due diligence before making any financial decisions or taking any action. The legal information provided on the air is not intended to substitute for callers hiring their lawyers to advise them about personal legal matters. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Liberty Group LLC paid for the following program, and the host's views and opinions do not represent those of the station or its ownership. California Life Agent number 048569. Persons engaging the services of one affiliate of Liberty Group LLC companies should be aware that each company is operated separately. You're listening to the Protect Your Assets Radio Network.